The intersection of endurance sport, health, fitness and life. Challenging conventional ideas and empowering people with the science of self-propelled motion. This is the Endurance Experience Podcast, hosted by Tony Rich.
So in May of this year, naturopath Anne Marie Paltzer and her lawyer went before the Arizona Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board to talk about an incident that happened last year. Paltzer is the clinical director of a birth facility in Gilbert, Arizona, called Birth Haven at Life Spring Midwifery. The center is owned by a midwife, not a nurse midwife, but a lay midwife. It employs many of them, and there are no physicians on staff except for Paltzer, although in Arizona, naturopaths are actually allowed to call themselves physicians. And I found this story in the meeting notes of the Arizona Naturopathic Board. The details are a little thin, but here's what we know. On November 29, 2016, Jane Doe arrived at the birth center in active labor. Paltzer, the naturopath, had seen Jane many times as a patient. And while she's not required to oversee the births at the birth center that are being supervised by midwives, she happened to be in that day. So Jane labored for about 4 hours, but her baby's head remained unengaged, which means the head had not dropped into the appropriate place in the pelvis for an easy delivery. And the midwife who was in charge of the birth noted that the baby's heart rate kept slowing. Now, if this goes on for too long, a C-section becomes more likely, and rightly so, and dips in the heart rate can definitely be considered dangerous. So the midwife and Paltzer consulted about what they should do. And instead of advising that Jane be transferred to a hospital, Paltzer recommended that Jane be given the homeopathic remedy, pulsatilla. And she said that this should be given every 15 minutes until things improve. Now, I know I don't need to say this to this audience, but homeopathy does not work. It can't work. So another 4 hours go by, and the midwife decides to add on another 2 homeopathic remedies. Jane's situation still isn't improving, and although the midwife is trained in giving Pitocin, she doesn't decide to give any. Pitocin's an effective labor-inducing drug. Another hour goes by, and 911 is called. The midwife reports to the 911 operator that the baby has non-reassuring heart tones and that labor is not imminent. Jane's transferred to the hospital, the baby's finally delivered, and even though the emergency team performs resuscitation for 30 minutes, the baby dies. Paltzer was brought before the Arizona board because the Arizona Department of Health Services forwarded a complaint about Paltzer that alleged that she failed to communicate with the hospital while Jane was being transferred. DHS inspected the birth center, and they issued 8 citations, one of which was for having expired medications on hand. And after asking Paltzer a few questions about the training of the midwives at the center, Paltzer said they have decided to discontinue the use of homeopathy. And the board, which claims to be protecting the public's health, unanimously voted to dismiss Paltzer's case. I find this incredibly outrageous. Naturopaths and lay midwives, who only need to see 50 births in order to be certified, have no chance at safely delivering babies. OBGYNs see thousands of births before they go into practice independently. And I suspect that if Paltzer had gone before a real medical board, she would have likely been suspended, perhaps even having her license revoked for gross negligence. But NDs can get away with anything. There's no standard of care. I have another heartbreaking story to tell you that some of you have probably heard about because I covered it several times last year at Forbes. In March 2017, a 30-year-old woman named Jade Eric went to a licensed naturopath in San Diego. Jade had eczema, which is an itchy and unsightly but otherwise benign skin condition. Kim Kelly, the naturopath, recommended that Jade get an intravenous injection of curcumin, which is present in the commonly used Indian spice, turmeric. The spice itself, and specifically curcumin, is widely believed by naturopaths to be anti-inflammatory, antiviral, anti-tumor, basically anti-anything bad. And curcumin is thought by many naturopaths and integrative practitioners to be incredibly safe. Here's a blog post by Kelly highlighting the many wonders of curcumin. He says it's good for arthritis, Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, and that it's good because it's been used for thousands of years. So Kelly mixed up an IV of liquid curcumin that was made by a local compounding pharmacy called Imprimis Pharmaceuticals. And within minutes, or perhaps just 1 minute, we don't actually know, Jade had a terrible reaction to her IV. Kelly assumed it was an allergic reaction, so he administered an EpiPen, and then he called 911. Then either on the way to the hospital or sometime before, Jade slipped into a coma. And about a day later, she was pronounced dead. There are a few important things to know about this case. First, it turns out that Jade wasn't actually issued a prescription for the liquid curcumin. According to new FDA rules, compounding pharmacies require that every patient has a prescription. But Imprimis stated that it had no record of a prescription for Jade. I actually wasn't surprised to hear this. It is really common in the naturopathic practice for naturopaths to order these types of medications in bulk under one patient's name and then to distribute this product to multiple patients. Many of my former colleagues did this. Second, it was later determined by the FDA that the curcumin product was made with a type of castor oil that is not suitable for medical use because it might contain allergens or contaminants.
That was Britt Marie Hermes speaking at an event for the Center for Inquiry. I will put the link to that lecture in the show notes for all of the listeners that would be interested. I highly recommend you go check out that lecture as well. Britt Hermes is a former naturopathic doctor. You'll learn later in the podcast that naturopathy includes what's called alternative medicine, which is basically any therapy that is not accepted by reputable and mainstream physicians, or therapies that boast treatment mechanisms that are either scientifically implausible or they're just simply not backed by empirical evidence or epidemiological findings. The two examples that Britt gave at the CFI meeting are just a couple of many examples of what can go wrong when people are seduced into foregoing conventional medical treatment for alternative medicine. Now, this could be for distrust of medicine, mainstream medicine, or they have bought into the guise that just because something is quote unquote natural, it is therefore better. For this audience, this is an important discussion and an important podcast because athletes and fitness enthusiasts are increasingly seeking out some form of naturopathy or alternative medicine. Things like acupuncture, cupping, herbal medicines, chiropractic medicine, all because people are made to believe that they are somehow outsmarting the collective consciousness of modern science and medicine. And these treatments are believed to enhance performance in athletes or recover athletes faster, among other extraordinary claims. Well, since this is the year of the whistleblower, I'm privileged to have this conversation with the chief whistleblower in this space, and that is Britt Marie Hermes. I think it's important for you to hear Britt's experience in her own words, so I won't give her complete bio up front, but know that she spent 3 years deep behind the lines practicing naturopathy, studying it, spending thousands of dollars learning it, only to realize that she had been living a lie and now spends her time fighting pseudoscience masquerading as real medicine. She documents her life experience in her blog, The Naturopathic Diaries. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. And now she is not only has a master's degree in a real scientific discipline, biomedicine, but also is a PhD candidate in evolutionary biology. So we have a conversation about her experience and the steps that led to her realization. We talk about the alternative medicines that are frequently sought out by athletes and fitness enthusiasts like acupuncture and cupping and more. We talk about the general problem of science denial, and I get Britt's response to some of the frequent comebacks from people who practice alternative medicine, like, oh, it's ancient wisdom, and placebo effect is still in effect, right, and all of that. So I get her response to those. And needless to say, go see your doctor, your primary care physician, or board-certified doctor if you have questions about anything at all with respect to therapies that are appropriate or not appropriate for you. So I'll have more to say in my afterword, but before then, it is a great honor to give you someone I consider to be a brave hero, Britt Marie Hermes. All right, I'm on with Britt Marie Hermes. Thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Sure, my pleasure.
All right, I've been wanting to do this podcast for some time. And so this podcast we describe as the intersection of sport, health, fitness, and life. And this topic of alternative medicine, naturopathy, this really, really fits. And I wanted to have this conversation with you above all, just because I think you have such an interesting story. So you are a former what's called a naturopathic doctor, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And I wanted to talk about your story. And so let's take as much time as we need to on this first conversation point. And for our listeners that may be unaware, you know, we'll talk about that. What is naturopathy in general? And what attracted you to it? How long did you spend in it? The education requirements and the level of your involvement, and then finally how you had a breakup moment with it. So let's take as much time as we need to and talk about that. How about that?
That sounds good. The whole shebang, in other words, you want it all. Yeah, sounds good. I mean, I can just jump in and you can guide me along the way and sort of break in where you think it would be good for the listeners. But I think it's important to start with just generally, like, what is naturopathic medicine? Because it's a hot topic right now, and people have probably heard the words of alternative medicine or perhaps functional medicine or naturopathy. And so essentially that this is a branch of alternative medicine. And people who call themselves naturopathic doctors are people who have gone to specific naturopathic schools, which is typically a four-year school. They've graduated from this program and they've taken some sort of licensing exam in order to use the title naturopathic doctor. Now, not all 50 states allow naturopathic practitioners to use the title doctor. So there's some legislative things going on that we can get into, you know, as we get into it. But I think, like, first and foremost, what is important for people to understand is that it's not medical school. It's its own entity. It's this whole system that operates outside of the medical school system. And that gets kind of confusing when you're looking into naturopathy, because a lot of the language that naturopaths and the naturopathic schools and the professional websites use draw from the medical system. So lines can get blurry for the public.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I went through one of these programs. I went through a program at Bastyr University, which is located outside of Seattle, Washington. And this was a four-year program. I graduated. I took my licensing exam. I got licensed and I practiced in Washington State and then later in Arizona State. And then, as you alluded to, I had a major breakup moment when I was in Arizona. But basically, like, what led me into alternative medicine and sort of being interested in this whole health system that operates outside of medicine was something that is super common and probably almost all, if not every single one of your listeners can relate to, which is a really bad experience with a doctor. Mm-hmm. So when I was 16, I developed a skin condition called psoriasis, which is, we call it an auto-inflammatory, but it's sort of like an autoimmune skin condition where you get these raised, kind of yucky, unsightly, reddish, silvery-looking plaques.
Yeah, I had that, like, as a kid.
You had it as a kid, too, so you yeah. know. Yeah, so I got this when I was 16, living in Southern California, and it sort of came on all at once, and it came on all over my body, so I was super distressed by this. And I knew exactly what it was because my mom has psoriasis. So my mom sent me to her dermatologist, who was really, you know, in my memory of the situation, was a big jerk about it. I don't remember all of the details, but I remember how he made me feel, which is he made me feel hopeless. Mm-hmm. He said something along the lines of, like, I would have this forever and that steroids were my only option to treat this medication. And when I expressed feeling really upset about the situation, he sort of kind of, like, you know, laughed at me a little bit and was like, you know, there's bigger problems in the world. And if this is your biggest problem, then lucky you. And when I asked him if there was anything other than steroids that I could do to help my skin condition, he said no. He said, there's nothing else other than taking these immunosuppressants or these steroid medications. And for me, that was really distressing information because my mom's psoriasis is not well controlled. And she takes really strong immune medications, immune suppressant or immune modulating medications, and she has suffered some side effects from these medications. So I was looking, you know, decades down the road and sort of seeing myself as her, and I could see what the future looked like, and I was really upset about it.
Mm-hmm. See, this is important because whether someone is a patient or a practitioner, they're often lured into naturopathy the same way. They have a bad experience with a doctor, and also oftentimes doctors are not empathetic. They're often very, you know, cold. Not everyone, but sometimes right. that happens.
Right.
And then people are lured in with buzzwords like holistic, natural energy, and you know
they're lured
clean.
In. Yeah, clean.
Perfect. Yeah.
Right. And they're lured in, seduced down the pathway to something that they genuinely think is better. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. You know, and this experience of, you know, having a crappy doctor is pretty universal. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big portion of the population that really gets turned off from medicine because of this, particularly women and particularly minorities who mm-hmm. don't really feel like they have a physician who looks like them or can relate to their own life experiences. Mm-hmm. And even if the physician or the health practitioner is saying the right words, if the tone isn't right, that's almost or perhaps just as important, because the patient may not remember the words that are said in that visit, but they're certainly going to remember how that practitioner made them feel.
Right.
And so if they're not coming across with warmth and understanding and empathy, it doesn't matter, you know, what important information sometimes is coming out of the mouth, because they're just thinking about like how bad that practitioner is making them feel in that moment. And so they can't even take in any of the information that's being stated anyway.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Exactly. And so that was the catalyst that got you into it. And so when you went to Bastyr, what was that education program like? So did you, first of all, was it expensive? And what was it like?
Yes, it was expensive. It cost just as much as going to a high-end medical school. So a lot of loans. I borrowed a lot of federal student loan money in order to attend. And, you know, what's interesting is that, so I really thought that I was going to some version of medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I thought I was going to some version of medical school is because the marketing and sort of the language that was used to describe the program at Bastyr used a lot of the same words and phrasing that medical schools use. So that, in conjunction with the high cost of tuition, sort of like helped, you know, create the illusion for me that this was a real thing, meaning like a real like medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed to have some prerequisite courses, some very basic chemistry classes and biology courses. And then it's a 4-year program. And the first 2 years of the program, when I went, the curriculum is structured differently now. But when I went, the first 2 years were essentially basic science mm-hmm. courses, anatomy, physiology, medical biochemistry. And the last 2 years were focused on more of the clinical sciences. And so I really thought that I was getting something very similar to a medical education, because this is also how medical schools are structured. Come to find out, you know, years later, when I went back to school to earn a master's of science, that actually those courses that I took at Bastyr didn't provide me with a strong enough science background to easily get through a master's of science program. And so they were sort of really, really basic and really, in my opinion, sort of under the level of what you would expect to receive at the doctorate or the medical school
right.
level.
So,
but at the time, I had the impression that, like, you know, I'm so cool, I'm going to medical school.
right, exactly. So just so, you know, the listeners are aware, when you got your master's in science, a real master's in science, they
right.
looked at the Bastyr stuff and said, this is not going to fly, right?
That's right.
And I don't know if you make this public or not, and you can choose not to answer, how much per year was Bastyr?
It was about $40,000 per year.
Wow. And you went for
4 years.
For 4 years.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow is right. So the school is accredited. And when a school is accredited, that allows students at that school to borrow federal student loan money in order to pay for the tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bastyr had also gotten special permission for its students to borrow at the same level that a medical student borrows at. So I was allowed to borrow that much money with federal student loans in order to pay for my tuition, which I think is a huge, in my opinion, is a huge mistake by the government and an oversight by the government. But then again, I now know that accreditation does not mean that the government has looked at the curriculum and sort of signed off on it. So I had a misunderstanding of what accreditation mm-hmm. means. And so I've learned a lot since going through this program, to say the least, about, you know, how federal student loan lending works and how schools become accredited and course accreditation and so forth. And that's a whole detailed discussion probably for another time.
Yeah.
But for the audience, the important piece here is that just because the school is accredited, it does not mean that the government has signed off and approved of the curricula. They don't actually look at that at all.
Right. And this is important, right? Because I'm sure you've seen over the last few years, there's been an explosion of people starting up their health and fitness businesses. Everyone's now is a quote unquote health coach, right?
Right.
Everybody right. out there. And look, I get it. People want to start up their businesses and you can be an entrepreneur, you know, go for it. I get that. But beware, you know, someone lures you down the pathway to spend $40,000 a year for education you think is on par with someone who gets a master's in, you know, biology or something. It's not. And so how did you, what was the breaking point where you said, oh no, what have I done? And this is not for me, and turned it around.
Right. So I graduated, I got licensed, I was working at a family naturopathic family clinic in Seattle, and then I moved to Arizona, where the practice setup was different. So I was working for a clinic that was owned and run by a naturopath who specialized in treating cancer patients. And I thought at the time that this was really cool. And I thought that this was a really novel treatment therapy. And now I know otherwise. But one of the therapies that this naturopath was offering was a drug that is called Ukraine, like the country. And it was delivered to the clinic in the mail. So it was coming overseas from Austria, actually. And patients were paying for it in cash. Therapy costs thousands of dollars. They had to pay for the therapy up front. And the therapy was being marketed as sort of a cancer cure-all. And in fact, if you go to the Ukraine website, you will read words that basically say it is a cancer cure-all. So the drug was being given in our clinic to patients with all different types of cancers at all different stages, which is a pretty amazing thing if you step back and think about it. I mean, there's no, I don't know of any cancer drug that's given to all types of cancers and all patients at different stages. But this is how the drug was being administered in our clinic. And one day, the package containing the Ukraine medication didn't show up, which of course made our patients very nervous because they had paid for the medication out of pocket and mm-hmm. up front. And my boss said something to me about the FDA possibly confiscating the package of medication, which I thought was a very strange comment. And I didn't quite understand what he meant by that or why the medication would be confiscated. So I essentially went home and started Googling the medication and FDA confiscation and tried to piece together what this comment meant, because it just didn't sit right with me. And I found out that this drug, Ukraine, is not approved by the FDA to treat cancer or any other condition, mm-hmm. and that its manufacturer had actually submitted for FDA approval but had been denied because the drug is associated with really serious side effects, including liver failure and bone marrow toxicity, which is a really, really bad thing that you don't want to happen, don't want to have happen to you. And meanwhile, the manufacturer of this drug had been arrested in Austria for charges related to fraud. So it turns out that he was relabeling and continuing to sell expired product. So that was perhaps one reason why the
package of medication didn't show up because the production line had been stopped because its manufacturer was now in jail. And so I don't mean to for this to come across lightly as I'm telling this story, but I was absolutely horrified, which might sound strange because on the one hand, naturopaths do a lot of things that are not quote unquote approved by the FDA. I mean, they use all sorts of therapies that regular doctors don't use. But I guess what was different for me is that the importation and the administration of a non-approved drug like Ukraine is potentially a federal crime. Mm-hmm. And so I was potentially involved in a federal crime because under my boss's orders, I had helped give this medication to patients. And I had also learned about these horrible side effects. And so now I was also afraid that one of our patients were going to get very sick or something very terrible was going to happen to them as a result of receiving this really nasty and unsafe medication. So to sort of summarize it, I was just beyond upset. I confronted my boss about what I had learned, who told me that he knew that what he was doing was in the ethical, he called it in the ethical gray zone, you know, and he knew that the medication was not approved by the FDA. I reported him to the board, the Arizona Board for Naturopaths. I also reported him to the Attorney General. I quit mm-hmm. my job. I got a lawyer to help me navigate the situation because I didn't know what was going to come next in terms of a federal investigation or whatnot. And then I started to look around at the naturopathic profession. I was really disturbed by my boss admitting that he knew that the medication was not approved by the FDA. And he also said things in our meeting that basically told me that there were many naturopaths doing the same thing and that this was basically what naturopaths do. Mm-hmm. So as I looked around at the profession, you know, I learned that he was right, that a lot of naturopaths knowingly and intentionally practice, you know, outside of the scope of practice of what is determined to be safe and sort of make up their own standards of care and do what they want because they think they know better than whomever, you know, the medical doctor next door or the FDA or whatever regulatory authority body we're talking about here. And I just found that all to be really upsetting and really disturbing. And I felt like I couldn't ethically be a part of the profession anymore. Mm-hmm. So I left.
Wow. And that takes, I mean, this is the reason why your story is so important, because you'll see practitioners that will be so deep in it. And so they will, you know, because they're so deep into debt with it, they'll sort of manufacture a rationalization. And you didn't do that. You, in the teeth of all that money you spent, decided that it wasn't worth it, given what was at risk. I mean, seducing people down the pathway to treatments that are away from mainstream treatment for cancer, for instance.
Right.
That's pretty telling because there's confirmation bias, right? So
yeah,
if someone were in that deep, oftentimes we just see that they can't get out because they've been doing it for 20 years.
Right.
They've been telling people it works for 20 years. And right. They manufacture rationalizations and reasons to stay in. That's hard to break out of. But you did it.
I did it. I think I got lucky, to be honest. because it happened fairly early in my career. So I was only 3.5 years in, you know, after graduating. So I hadn't spent, you know, decades of my life selling it. I didn't have a small business loan for the practice I opened. You know, I didn't have other debts. I didn't have children at that time. So there, you know, I was in a different situation where it was like, if I'm going to walk away, I need to walk away.
Did you do residency with, do they have such a thing for?
They have their own version of residency, and I did the naturopathic version of this. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I was really scared. I think that was another important piece to this. You know, not many people find themselves in a situation where they might be involved in a federal crime.
Right.
You know, I was really staring down this, like, hugely scary situation where I didn't know what was going to happen and what sort of investigation lay ahead of me. And it didn't happen overnight, you know, but it happened over the course of several months. And after reaching out to people for help and reading a lot of resources and crying a lot, and I needed professional help at this time. You know, I had both a psychiatrist and a psychologist because I was having panic attacks and just massive anxiety disorder, you know, going through this process. But all things considered, I think I was pretty lucky. And, you know, I had some good people on my side to help me navigate through it. And, you know, I just feel super grateful that I'm out and on the other side now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, just imagine. So the whole thing with the, you know, something not being approved by the FDA, just imagine people who do this for decades. And I mean, I've come across some, right? And so,
yeah.
And contrast with a real doctor. If I were to meet an MD,
right,
and I say, oh, I have some problem. I'm having trouble breathing, and I have sinus issues. They would take great care so as to not self-diagnose me or give me bad information. They will say something like, oh, you need to go see your primary care physician, have it checked out. I can't give you any information. Go see your doctor. But if you come across one of the naturopathic practitioners, they will tell you immediately that they know a cure. Many of them, maybe not all, but many of them would immediately offer a potential cure. And I see this.
Well, for sure, because that's part of their shtick. You know what I mean? Because naturopaths attract patients who have been turned off from the medical system, either because they've been treated terribly or because they have some sort of orphan disease that medicine doesn't explain very well or not at all. And so the therapies offered to them by real physicians are terribly disappointing for whatever reason. They don't, you know, they don't alleviate symptoms or the side effects are too great to deal with. And so it's these patients who go to the naturopath for something else. And as a naturopath, if I'm sitting there with you, the desperate patient, and I don't have something hopeful to say to you, like, oh yeah, I can get to the bottom of this, or I have a whole set of therapies that can give you relief without side effects, well, then I'm being a terrible naturopath, and I'm not making enough money to pay off my student loans. So that's like our whole marketing stick is to draw you in with those false promises.
I can do better than the doctor. I have the real cure, which the doctors are not making you aware of, and so on. Interesting.
Exactly.
So you went on, you know, so you did your master's, and I read you're also a PhD candidate now?
Right. So I left the profession. My husband was then offered a PhD position at a university in northern Germany. So we got married and moved to Germany. And then I realized once I was in Germany that higher education in Germany is free. And so I suddenly had this wonderful opportunity to re-educate myself.
Mm-hmm.
And for free, so without taking out more student loans.
Right.
So that's what I set out to do, which was totally harder than I thought it was going to be because, as I said earlier, the science education that I had at naturopathic school was not nearly enough to make my master's of science program easy to get through. And on top of that, I had to beg the admissions committee to give me a chance and let me in because they didn't think that they basically looked at that education. They're like, we don't know what this is. This isn't real. We don't know what to do with you.
If that is not telling. So for all of the listeners, if you go to a real university and go to a real master's in science, PhD, in a scientific discipline, they are not accepting any of that quote-unquote naturopathic university material.
not even in Europe, where apparently, you know, well, Germany is the birthplace of naturopathy, so that's what's like extra funny about this is that Germans definitely know what naturopathy is. They're definitely familiar with it. And there's this idea, I call it the European fallacy, where, you know, people in the States are like, oh, well, in Europe, they treat this disease like this, or they treat cancer like that, because Europeans are more evolved and they have all the special cures and answers. And it's like, actually, no, it's exactly the same. There's many of the same healthcare system problems. And it turns out that even the Germans don't accept my naturopathic education.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. You know, obviously the real danger is when people are seduced down the pathway away from conventional medicine for things like cancer and things, other big medical problems. So let's, that's an amazing story. I think you should write a book at some point. Do you ever think about doing that? About your
Yes, I know. And I say it like, yes, I know. Not because you're telling me, it's because it's like, I know I need to put pen to paper, and I'm just really struggling with carving out the time to make that happen.
Yeah. Book, documentary, movie, all of this needs to be
reality show.
Oh, that would be amazing. It's really important because you can argue from somebody who's deep inside a machine, and
it's,
you
true.
Know, anytime we have conversations about this, about real science and evidence based approaches in health, fitness, and sport, and they always try to somehow discredit the person where it's coming from. But you were in it, $200,000. Well, how much? $200,000 in it. Deep inside of the machine.
Don't say it out loud.
So, okay, let's get into a couple of the. So, you know, we deal with athletes, we deal with health and fitness professionals, and you know, people that are in, you know, general healthcare, and we're seeing a $1 billion industry go into some of this stuff, and. I wanted to talk to you about a couple of the ones that we see a lot. And we're seeing a lot of acupuncture and cupping. And, you know, famously, in Rio Olympics, Michael Phelps, you know, before his meet, had the circles on his back, the broken blood vessels. And then, but we see it. We see a lot of athletes seeking it out for what they perceived to be performance benefits or recovery benefits. So from someone who's been deep inside the machine, help our listeners unpack these treatments and when they can go wrong or, you know, be either unethical or maybe even harmful.
Right. So have you talked about acupuncture or cupping at all, or should I briefly explain what these are?
Yeah, briefly explain what they are.
Okay, so they both come from traditional Chinese medicine, or TCM for short. And so acupuncture is the idea of lancing the body with these teeny tiny needles in specific points that will help a magical energy that is believed to be inside the body called qi move around. Mm-hmm. And the TCM practitioners believe that you get sick because there's something wrong with the qi. The qi is either stuck or it's not flowing appropriately, or you have too much qi. And so by accessing these specific acupuncture points, you can rebalance the energy in your body. And cupping is, you know, also from the TCM ancient world, but it's practiced by... Let me see if I can explain this. By taking literally a cup, usually a glass cup, and then it's heated, and then it's placed on the body to create a tight seal or a tight suction. And this draws the blood to the surface, and then the cup is pulled off, and it makes a very satisfying popping sound mm-hmm. when it does this. And it feels like a massage technique, but the act of having the cup sort of like suction wise adhere to the body creates these round bruises mm-hmm. On the body, which is what you saw mm-hmm. on Michael Phelps's back during that yeah. Olympics. So the type of cupping that I know of is called dry cupping. So I guess there's a form of cupping where like the skin is lanced and the patient bleeds. And I think that this is basically a form of bloodletting. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that is actually practiced very often anymore. I'm not familiar with it. The one that I'm familiar with is the dry cupping, which just causes these really gnarly bruises. And again, it's the idea that you are sort of moving the qi and mm-hmm. cleansing the blood and rebalancing the energy in the body to heal disease. Right. So both of these are based on an understanding of the body that is not accurate.
Right.
So traditional Chinese-based medicine uses a different organ system. You know, in their version of anatomy, organs are placed in different areas of the body, and they have different organs than what we know to be true today. And the organs that are there do different physiological functions than what we know to be true. So all of this information that TCM is based off of, we know is wrong.
Right.
Yet acupuncture and cupping still diagnoses and treats using this old information. So that's like the first concerning thing from my perspective, is that you could be missing a real diagnosis or causing more harm because you're using this system of medicine that is like super and totally wrong.
Right. And so you basically, you can either just completely miss something that is really wrong, Or just be seduced down the pathway to just, you know, forego conventional treatment altogether.
That's right. And I guess I should say, I didn't even explicitly say, but like there's no such thing as qi.
Right.
So there isn't, right? So this is the first problem. There's no such thing as this magical energy force that lives in the body. Either the body is working appropriately and is in homeostasis, or it's not. And whether or not the body is healthy or sick has nothing to do with qi or any other version of qi, like, you know, we sometimes hear it called prana, or, you know,
prana,
different,
right. Yeah,
exactly. Different alternative systems of medicine call it different things, but we don't have magical energy in
right.
our body. We either have like healthy functioning organ systems or we don't.
And right. That's if anybody can prove as such, that, I mean, Stephen Hawking wrote 7 books. You won't find anything in there about qi. So if anybody can prove as such, there's a Nobel Prize in physics, medicine, just waiting for anybody who can prove first that qi exists,
right.
and secondly, that they know how to stab it or cup it or access it to heal.
Manipulate it, right.
A body. There's right. a Nobel Prize in physics and medicine just waiting, but people still seek it out. And then, you know, it's dry needling, and then there's also dry cupping, and then there's dry needling, which I think is just the same as acupuncture, I think, right?
Yeah, basically, you're basically, you know, touching these points on the body with the intention to move chi.
Got it.
So, as to whether it's ethical, now, I think that this is an interesting and tricky question. Mm-hmm. And I think it depends on your perspective, of course. If it's being sold, so if I'm a practitioner selling you, Tony, you know, cupping and acupuncture with promises of curing disease, to me that's like frankly unethical. Mm-hmm. But if I'm selling you cupping and acupuncture with true informed consent, which looks like, listen, the evidence for this is really not very good. It might reduce some pain, but probably not any better than any other placebo therapy. And here are the risks associated with these therapies. And there are indeed risks. Mm-hmm. And you still choose to undergo the therapy. Well, then I think we can make the argument that the therapy has been carried out as ethically as possible. But I still think it's tricky because I'm charging you for this fake therapy, right? So I think what gets complicated here is that, especially like in the case of these Olympic athletes, is I assume these therapies are being carried out with the promise of better sports performance,
right?
Or perhaps pain relief or muscle recovery, improved oxygen levels. Mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever, you know, sports promise you want to add in there.
Yeah, but they all rise and fall on chi, though. I mean,
they all rise and fall on chi. That's exactly right.
Or
at the end of the day, the practitioner doing the therapy probably, I mean, it doesn't look good for the practitioner carrying out the therapy either way, because either they're a true believer, which means they're terribly misinformed and perhaps, delusional, mm-hmm. or they know what they're doing isn't real, and they're still choosing to carry out the therapy and to make money off of patients anyway.
Right. So it makes sense. So somebody could genuinely believe, I know for a fact that this works, and they're carrying it out. Or someone knows about chi and knows that there's nothing, there's no evidence of chi and, you know, placebo effect, which we can talk about and such. But it seems to me that these treatments are very expensive.
Mm.
That's the other thing. It's luring people into very expensive treatments that they just have to keep coming back for over and over and over again.
Yeah, for sure. So there's real risks with using alternative therapies. So one risk that you mentioned that I don't think gets enough airplay, honestly, is the cost of these therapies. And mm-hmm. you're right, they are terribly expensive, and it's never a one-off therapy. It's always like, subscribe to this health plan. I need you to come once a week, twice a week, three times a week, or whatever it is for X many months. And people often go for years on end.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So how about one other? I mean, there's so many. I mean, we could have a whole podcast on herbal remedies, chiropractic medicine, supplements, homeopathy, all of them. What's maybe one other case, just so we drive home to the listeners, one other case that you're aware of where some of these can actually go really wrong?
Yeah. So let me think about this for a second. I mean, I just read a study or a case, I think it was yesterday, of a patient who suffered collapsed lungs from mm-hmm. acupuncture therapy. So the patient had gone in to get acupuncture, and the acupuncture needles had been placed in and around the rib cage, and the patient's lungs collapsed and needed to be hospitalized. You saw that too.
Yeah.
You can also cause air emboli with acupuncture, meaning you push like a bolus of air through the lungs accidentally, which can be very dangerous and deadly for the patient. Mm-hmm. As a naturopath, I prescribed all sorts of special diets and herbal supplements that mm-hmm. could have potentially caused protein deficiencies and definitely anemias, leading to, you know, real problems for that patient who was training.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm trying to think of, so homeopathy can be really, really dangerous.
Right.
Really, really dangerous. And this is often misunderstood by people. So homeopathy is a system of ancient medicine that is based on this idea that it's the energy of the substance that is healing and not the actual substance itself. And in order to extract the energy of this whatever medicinal substance you're using, you dilute the substance mm-hmm. so much so that it no longer can be detected. So, for example, if I were to take a leaf from the tree, because I believe that the leaf was medicinal in some way, I would extract it in water and then continue to dilute that vial of water so that when I tested that vial, you couldn't no longer detect that there was any leaf right. in that vial. And then it's that dilute substance that I would then use as a medicine.
So they think
so that sounds.
They think the water has memory.
That's right. They think the water has memory. And superficially, that sounds really benign. But the problem is that there are no standards in terms of how these homeopathic preparations are manufactured. And so what happens is that you oftentimes have something, have a product that is contaminated. And so worst case scenario is that it's contaminated with something that can actually cause serious harm or even death. And so unfortunately, there have been really tragic cases of children taking homeopathic remedies and getting very sick mm-hmm. and some even dying because of these contaminated products. So they're not supposed to contain anything, but they do contain some contaminant or even some remnant of the original substance, which in some cases is a toxic substance.
Wow. And that's incredible. And then I've seen some cases too of intravenous vitamins and,
oh my God. Yeah. I could talk for days on intravenous supplements, but yeah, I mean, basically anything, you know, any therapy that you want to seek out, you could find a naturopath mm-hmm. offering. So it totally runs the gamut from looking at the eyeball and diagnosing disease, looking at the iris, to using homeopathy, to all sorts of like colonics, using coffee and crazy herbs, some of which are really dangerous to use, you know, injections with all sorts of substances, not just vitamins and minerals, but also like plant products. So it gets really wacky and really crazy real quick.
Right. Wow. All under the guise of natural is better. We have the real cure that the doctor is holding from you and everything like that. So many of the listeners out there have been listening. I can just hear, you know, incoming, you know, the placebo effect is still a real effect. And I want to get your opinion on placebo, because many of these concepts are, they're basically placebo effects. And I read about placebo effect before, you know, someone with a white lab coat will have a induce a placebo response on someone versus someone who doesn't have a white lab coat or something like that. And then there's mm-hmm. things like different color pills will have different effects and mm-hmm. such. So
yeah.
what are your thoughts on the idea that placebo effect is still an effect, which would someone will say?
So the placebo effect is a real thing. I don't consider necessarily the placebo effect to be medicine, mm-hmm. though. I think it's a psychological phenomenon that happens and is interesting to study, you know, in the context of the psychology discipline. And I also don't think that a placebo effect should be charged for and carried out as though it were
right.
medicine. And so if you're a practitioner charging a patient and going through the steps of a medical visit, knowing that what you're providing isn't anything but a placebo, then I think that practitioner is in the wrong for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And you know, you can get placebo effect from so many things. It's just I never bought the placebo effect is still an effect type of response.
And really, I mean, why should we have to settle for the placebo effect?
Right.
I mean, listen, medicine should be better than the placebo effect. So the placebo effect is like there's some baseline response that we can measure based on what's happening, you know, through the practitioner interaction with the patient and the environment and if the pill is blue and whatever, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
And so like, I mean, don't we as patients deserve better than the placebo effect?
Exactly.
And so if all alternative medicine can offer is, you know, the baseline response, then to me that's not good enough.
Right. And then real medicine works on the gold standard, placebo-controlled, double-blind, randomized trials. And,
right.
You know, something like acupuncture is tested versus a control group. They use what's called sham acupuncture where the needle doesn't go in. And then they'll use other types of a control where they'll stick the needles in random places away from the quote unquote chi meridians. And then
that's right.
If it really worked, the treatment, the group that got the real treatment would see a different response than the control. And so that's what real medicine is based upon, placebo controlled, double blind randomized trials. And that's why it works when we have good evidence for it. So
that's exactly right. And you know, if you as the patient, I think this is what I like to tell people in my close orbit, you know, is like if you're going to these alternative practitioners and you feel like you're getting something out of chiropractic or acupuncture that is worth your time, then you know, I encourage you then to structure your week to take some time for yourself that does not involve going and paying an alternative practitioner, but rather just finding some time to lay down, turn on some relaxing music, maybe light a candle that you like, and sort of take the self-care to create that low stress, you know, calm environment that you find to be so relaxing and nice and therapeutic for you in that sense, because you can achieve those results without having to get in the car and drive anywhere, without having to pay anybody money for their time. You can do that yourself. So I think it's just a little bit about perhaps implementing a self-care routine.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a good example of this is the massage. I love massage, and it's one of the most studied concepts of health and fitness, whether in sports, whether or not massage actually improves performance or recovery. The evidence has always been very mixed on whether it does, but I still like to get them, not because I think it's going to make me perform or recover faster, just because I like it. So
right.
Yeah, if there's things like that help you release diminished stress hormone, yeah, take a bath with candles or whatever, massage, go for it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so what do you know about the general makeup of people who are you've talked about some. Of the demographics of the people who generally will go for naturopathy or alternative medicine. Do you have any high-level knowledge of that?
Yeah, they tend to be white women of upper, middle to upper socioeconomic status between the ages of like 25 and 50. Yeah. So it definitely seems to be a population of people who have extra income, which I think makes sense because in a way they can afford to, of course, pay for extra medical costs that aren't covered by insurance. And they can afford to be sick, which I think sounds strange, but like bear with me. So for example, like the anti-vaxxer population tends to also be the same population. And so these are people who, like, if it's okay if their child gets an illness, there's someone at who can stay home with the kid or isn't going to work or can afford the extra medical cost to pay for that illness as a result of choosing to get medical care outside of the real medical system.
Yes. Yeah. And that just demonstrates the truly pernicious part of this. In my own community, the African-American community, we see higher rates of health risks, some higher rates of distrust of real medicine. And these are the people that they'll go into naturopathy and alternative medicine because of, those doctors, they're going to find something wrong with you. If you go to them. So it's distrust of medicine. You know, the people who really can afford to be sick go and afford those treatments.
Right.
Go after it. And so that's very interesting. Is there any political split by any chance? Like,
that's a good question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I would assume that the politics follow the economics.
Yeah.
And so, but I'm just guessing. I'm just guessing there.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely both. I've had experience seeing it from all people across the entire spectrum, for sure.
Right. Right.
You know, but the interesting thing is, you'll see, right, someone will, and rightly so, admonish the run-of-the-mill climate change denier, right? And
right.
Reprimand them, but at the same time, they'll do alternative medicine, right? Where the same science that tells you the climate is warming and the humans are the cause of it is the same exact scientific medicine that tells you there's nothing to chi. But yet
they will
become a climate change denier when faced with their church views, in that they use the same exact arguments as the climate change denier, even though they base their votes on, you know, who's for climate change, right? And so they'll do everything from alternative medicine to even astrology and tarot cards to things like that. And that is very interesting that happens. You know, I've seen people basically turn into a climate change denier or use the same arguments when they are in every other part of their lexicon. They would claim to be an advocate for science. So it's weird. So maybe we finish up with a couple of the common rebuttals, right, that we often see. And some people may be listening right now and probably screaming out loud, right, the common rebuttals we always see. Science is right one day and wrong the next. Science has been wrong before.
Right.
One day it's, coffee's good for you, the next day coffee's bad for you. We see this all the time.
True. And if they're reading the headlines, they're not wrong. This is a super common argument thrown out. And so I think at first the way to engage with this is to first talk about what science is and what science is not. Mm-hmm. So science is a process. It is not the truth. It is not the end-all, be-all of anything.
Right.
Science is constantly evolving, and the process of which and how we understand whatever it is that's being studied is constantly evolving and changing with, of course, new information, so that the foundation is constantly being built upon, but also we're developing new techniques to better understand whatever it is that's being studied. And so this gets tricky in terms of health science and studies being translated into headlines, because you can interpret the study and the information and make guidelines and recommendations for patients using a different mindsets, I guess, or different, you can come at it from different ways. So you can come at it from like a very cautionary perspective in terms of like, we don't know enough, so don't change, or we don't know enough, so stay away from it.
Yeah.
Or you can come at it from sort of a more optimistic or a different side of it, which is like, we don't know, so keep doing what you're doing. And I think that is what gets really tricky with, for example, like eat meat, don't eat meat, eat butter, don't eat butter, drink coffee, don't right. drink coffee. Right. You know, so it depends on who's interpreting the data and sort of what their, you know, philosophy is in terms of setting guidelines to help guide public health recommendations. And this changing like outlook, I think it needs to be reframed as not a bad thing, not as science doesn't know anything, therefore we shouldn't listen to it, but rather as science is a process that is ever changing, that the body of knowledge grows as time goes on and is evolving to help practitioners make better public health guidelines for the public. And so we should be a little, appreciative and understanding exactly. and understanding of that. Not only natural practitioners, natural medicine practitioners will present information as the end all be all or final say in something.
And can a scientist get comfortable with a pet theory? Sure. But the enterprise of science has built in controls, placebo control, right. double blind randomization, meta analysis, systematic review. There's built in controls to ferret all of that out eventually. And so, this idea that, science is right one day, wrong the next, or it's just another religion. It's just, So, all right. How about, but what about Big Pharma? Big Pharma is deliberately hiding the cure, the real cure for cancer. And, therefore it's not to be trusted.
I love this one, I have to say, because it the person saying it assumes that there's no big naturopathy, that there's no big supplement. And let me tell you, there is a major big supplement. Mm-hmm. I was visited so often by supplement company representatives, far, far more than pharmaceutical representatives. I don't think I was ever actually visited by a pharmaceutical representative, but the amount of times that I had supplement companies showing up and offering me deals and free lunch and snacks and all sorts of goodies mm-hmm. to sell their product was often. So there definitely is a big supplement industry. It operates just like Big Pharma, where they're doing their own research to promote their own product.
Yeah.
So the natural medicine industry is not perfect. They're not clean. You know, they're right. not without their problems. But the idea that that Big Pharma is suppressing information in order to keep people sick or in order to keep profiting is a really sad conspiracy theory that continues.
That is moon landing level conspiracy theory. To think that there aren't doctors in Big Pharma that have people around them that they love that have cancer, and they are deliberately hiding it so that they can create a profit machine. That's
right.
That's moon landing level conspiracy. Yeah. That's just crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's ancient wisdom. What's wrong? It's ancient wisdom, and ancient wisdom should be trusted. What do you say to that?
Right. Well, I mean, there are lots of ancient ideas, right, mm-hmm. that we no longer believe right. because we now know them to not be true. So, we used to believe that the Earth was the center of the solar system. Mm-hmm. For example, people used to think the Earth was flat. Well, some people, I guess, still do, but these are probably the people who also believe that Big Pharma is suppressing cancer cures. Mm-hmm. So the idea that a theory is old does not make it automatically correct. Unfortunately, age is not, a telltale sign of what is accurate and what is not.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. right? And just because something is ancient, right? It's just...
I mean, there's so many examples. I mean, we used to burn witches at the stake, right? So that's an ancient belief. I mean, there's just so many examples. So it's just like you can't go based on this idea of like, well, homeopathy has been around for hundreds of years, therefore, it's real.
Right. I mean, and people, you know, who didn't know what thunder was because they didn't have the benefit of modern understanding, somehow, just because it's old, that it's better. Astrology is old. All of that.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I want to end with one interesting piece of information that I think that I don't think you know, but if you know, you have to tell me. So, homeopathy has serious roots in racism. Mm-hmm. So back in World War II days, the Nazis were developing homeopathy as a special medicine for the Aryan race. And it was being studied principally to be carried out only for Aryans, and was supposed to be, you know, the medical system that would help them create their rule, their white reign, or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And so it has really ugly, nasty history in racism and with Nazis. And people conveniently forget that bit of homeopathy when touting its magical benefits.
That's unbelievable. I didn't know all those details on that.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. We are getting close to time here, so let's finally just, you know, how do we change people's minds, in your opinion? How do we do that?
With kindness and with patience. It's really hard to change someone's mind, and so I always recommend that these types of conversations happen over the course of many conversations. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to change anyone's mind, you know, through one sitting. They should be done probably face to face or on the phone, or, you know, or in a situation where you can read emotional cues from the other person. You should approach the situation with empathy and understanding that the person who has their beliefs in an alternative medicine, or the person who's choosing to use alternative medicine, is doing so for reasons that are very valid and very real for them. They are probably scared. You know, research shows us that people who pursue alternative therapies for cancer, for example, feel hopeless and helpless. And so they're looking for a sense of control, and they're looking for a sense of hope that they didn't find in the visit with their medical oncologist. So I think it's really important to acknowledge those feelings and to draw those feelings out to understand if that's really what's driving the behavior of the person seeking alternative therapies. And then start presenting, you know, so after you lay that groundwork of, you know, the emotional work, then start presenting facts. Mm-hmm. But the facts have to be in very small bite-sized pieces. And you should start with something that isn't going to rock the person's world too much. So if the person's a diehard believer in homeopathy, don't start with homeopathy. Start with acupuncture, or start with something that person doesn't have an emotional attachment to. Right. And as you start to, you know, build a, you know, trust and a rapport with the patient, then you can start to get at the heart of, you know, some of these more deeply held beliefs. But it's a long, slow process that we all should be doing, and I hope that we can all engage in, and it can be done, but it needs to be done with loving kindness.
Right. And then perhaps what happened to you happens, and then, you know, the house of cards falls, and then we can start building a stronger one through, you know, science and evidence-based approaches.
That's right.
Thank you so much. Again, I can't wait for the book come out. The book, the documentary, and the movie.
The Netflix show.
They all have to come out. And then I'll be able to look back on this and say, I had the podcast with it. All right.
My pleasure. Britt-Marie
Hermes, thank you so much.
Yes, of course. It was great talking to you.
Thanks again to Britt Marie Hermes for coming on to the podcast and talking with me. Her account of her experiences and traveling through the wormhole with naturopathy hopefully was enough to red pill even one person. I'd be interested in hearing from you if you're out there, so feel free to comment on the posted podcast thread. Also, check out Britt's site, naturopathicdiaries.com, where she publishes a wealth of information on these important issues. She has a Facebook fan page under her name, and she tweets under the handle @naturodiaries. Also, regardless of where you stand, and particularly for those that are currently getting such therapies, I invite you to take an unbiased and objective read of a book called Trick or Treatment by Simon Singh and Dr. Edzard Ernst. There are multiple PhDs between those two, and obviously Ernst is a medical doctor. They take a complete analysis and assessment of most forms of alternative medicine. So inform yourself, because there are those that are looking to take advantage of one's lack of knowledge and or credulity. I'll put the link to that book in the show notes. Above all, I hope you got out of the podcast the answer to the question of what's the big deal? What's the big harm? Well, obviously the implications are much bigger than what some practitioners of these remedies think. At worst, the populace can be moved to forego proven medical treatment and potentially compromise their health or life. And at minimum, they're seduced down the pathway of science denial and unethical and or costly or ineffective therapies. I spent the better part of a decade with collaborators standing up a platform to train and coach athletes for competition with other athletes. Marathons, triathlons, Ironman distances, ultramarathons, etc. In doing so, it was always pivotal that our approach, from training to recovery to nutrition, fueling, athlete psychology, all of it had to be grounded in the best science available. I insisted on it. Our athletes wear an atom on their chest representing that primary principle. So I have no problem with those holding themselves out as quote-unquote health coaches. And you want to help people with nutrition and fitness? Good. There's many people out there that need help. But I might recommend that you distinguish yourself from your counterparts that pawn off ancient wisdom as medicine because they want to be perceived as quote-unquote holistic. Just take a step back and ask yourself, is it plausible or probable that ancient observers who were simply trying to make sense of the world around them and didn't have the benefit of modern understanding somehow had the best ideas to help people today? I mean, shouldn't it be palpably evident that these therapies are just trafficking in primitive superstition versus ancient wisdom? Or is it just a trendy or perceived interesting way to stick it to or outsmart big medicine? I don't know. But as we acknowledged in the podcast, there are certainly some aspects of medicine that you can point to and call out as things that either need to be done better by medicine, like, you know, more empathy from doctors across the board, and particularly more empathy for women, girls, minorities, etc. You know, Britt talked about this. I could readily submit also that there could be accountability for something like the opioid epidemic or pricing of pharmaceuticals or other cases that come to mind. I can sympathize with much of that in those areas, but this is no justification to sidestep modern medicine, which comes to us by the most rigorous approaches of the scientific method and epidemiological study. Can there sometimes be issues with things like publication bias, or certainly sometimes scientists can get too comfortable and cozy with pet positions and hypotheses? Sure. Can there be low-quality studies that get misunderstood as reputable? Yep. But within science, there are built-in mechanisms to eventually remove bias and drive towards emergent truths. I'm talking about double-blind, randomized placebo-controlled trials. Double-blind meaning neither the researcher nor the subject being researched know what the study is about. That's done to remove potential bias. Double-blind is obviously the gold standard. That's not always possible, but single-blind is also high quality. There's peer review, there's systematic review, meta-analysis, etc. Tens of thousands of researchers trying to outdo each other, creating a sort of arms race of science. This is, by the way, the frequent testimony that I hear. I know with 100% certainty that XYZ therapy worked on me because I tried it and it worked. That doesn't work because you are an N of one. And to determine that something actually works with statistical significance, it needs to be put through those rigorous approaches that I previously described. We try our best to put everything through that approach, if it's possible. And that's why every day we confidently wake up and can reap the benefits of science. Otherwise, you wouldn't use so much as a microwave oven, and you'd turn in your iPhone if you distrust science so much. Alternative medicine that is backed by empirical evidence has a name. It's called medicine. If you need legal help, you'd never think of seeking out an alternative attorney. If you need car engine help, you'd never think about going to an alternative car mechanic. And certainly if you had to fly on an airplane, you wouldn't book a ticket with Alternative Airplane Pilot Airlines. You'd never take any such action in any other part of your life. So if you embrace science when it is convenient to embrace it, and relax it when it is convenient to relax it, how does it make you any different than the run-of-the-mill climate change denier or anti-vaxxer? In fact, you open the door for them because you're effectively using the same science-denying arguments when you rationalize chi or energy healing or some other form of pseudoscience. Try this on for an experiment, because I've actually already done this, but you'll find it interesting. Find the arguments of the climate change denier on why they think the science is wrong. And then find the arguments of those propagating ideas of naturopathy, chi, energy healing, crystals, anything. And look at why they think science is wrong. Line those arguments up and you'll find that they're using many of the exact same arguments. And to understand how this happens, look no further than, we talked about it, confirmation bias, or cherry-picking the occasional idea you can find that you think agrees with your view, and then ignoring the mountains of evidence that's out there that demonstrates your view is false. Science is true whether or not you choose to believe in it. And if you agree, it should be embraced no matter how inconvenient it is or whether or not it disagrees with one's cherished views.
Follow Event Horizon Endurance Sport on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for training programs and services to become a member of our Endurance Institute or for a complete archive of podcasts, log on to our website, eventhorizon.tv.